Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. We are live in studio again this week with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones leading our discussion on Teach Your Team to Fish. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you, Shelley. Great to be here.
Great to have you. I love the little image, the graphic images in the book chapters, the little fish that swimming at the top of each page. I love that. And I don't know how many times I've read this and not noticed that, but very, very cool.
That's funny.
I know. And so I want to make you feel extremely welcome today. So I am going to put on my best welcoming personality type and just say it is so great to be on the show with you today. And I hope you feel so welcome that we have invited you to talk about something that you are passionate about and you've been writing about for a very long time. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was a great intro.
Well, we're talking this week about how the Omega Leader, Jesus, made people feel welcome. And as you know, in our society of speed and acceleration, welcoming is probably not at the top of any of our lists, I would say. How about you?
Yes, and I think that dogs were sent here to teach us how to make people feel welcome.
And why is that? Why do you think that?
Well, they do flips. I mean, they get so excited when they see you, and it's as if you've been gone 100 years and you might have just walked to the corner store. And I know my little Roo, who's the Yorkie Bichon, he just trembles like he's seen the Holy Ghost. It doesn't matter if I've just left him for 5 minutes. He does a little tap dance, and he spins around to the left, and then he spins around to the right, and then he stands, and he just stamps his feet 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to see my godson, Jacob, and he would see me walk in the door, and he would take off running through the house in circles. And one time we sat there and counted him, and he ran 26 laps through the house. He was so excited to see me. And, you know, that's the way Jesus is about us. That's the way God is about us. So excited that we're alive. I mean, when you really stop to think about it, which we don't often enough, we are each made in his image. In other words, he sculpted us. We are his fantasy, if you will, his dream person. He created us and looks at us with so much love and affection and appreciation. And if we just knew that, then we could have the sense of Christ, who knew he was totally loved by his Father. I think that's what made him glow.
Wow. Wow, what a beautiful picture you just painted for us. Thank you. That was awesome.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You talk in this chapter, Lori, it's in the section of release. Interesting how these all fit together. It's just amazing how your mind and heart and the words that were crafted in this book, how they just fit with the word release. I mean, it's just amazing. And so when I think about the word welcome in the context of release, I've heard you often talk about these endorphins when people are in their sweet spot or when they've connected with someone or there's just something magical that has happened, and this kind of release in the brain and in the mind, it flows out through us. And I kind of got a picture of that in this chapter this week, thinking about the word welcome, you know. And in my experience and in my background, I spent a lot of time in the welcoming process with churches and teaching them how to greet and welcome and sustain that welcoming process. But this week, as I read it in light of the word release, what are we actually moving between ourselves and someone else when we release that welcoming spirit or that welcoming attitude to someone, what's happening there?
I think it's saying, you know, namaste. The God in me sees the God in you. That you are acknowledging their right to exist, your delight that they exist, that you are glad they were born into the world. And, you know, I've done a lot of coaching and have many friends who are counselors and therapists, and a major issue, and in fact you see it in the newspaper every day, acted out in different ways, or in the news media, if you will. People that felt welcomed as children tend to grow up to be happier adults, and people who did not feel wanted or welcomed have issues that can cast very long shadows, not only across their lives, but everyone they encounter. Those of everyone they encounter. So, you know, the very notion of an unwanted child is tough. It's tough to get over. Why, you know, why were they turned away? Why were they not wanted? And then it becomes upon the adoptive families who wanted this child to try to somehow overcome that scarring of, you were wanted, we want you.
Yeah, you talk in this chapter about one of the exercises in the path process that you teach called the Cup of Sorrow, and how that played into adults not feeling welcomed in their family of origin. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Or?
Sure. The Cup of Sorrow, I'm so glad you brought that up. The Cup of Sorrow is an exercise that we do sometimes in our PATH workshops, where we have the person imagine everything that went into the Cup of Sorrow that their mother or father or parent figure was drinking. So, for example, one woman said, my father was an alcoholic, so Jack Daniels was in his cup of sorrow. And it was like, no, what were the feelings around being an alcoholic that went into that cup of sorrow? You know, regret, resignation, giving up, surrender, self-disgust, any of those things could be part of an alcoholic's regime. And then this one woman said that her mother's cup of sorrow was that her husband left her and her mother's husband left her. So she was always telling her that men will always leave you. So her cup of sorrow was a sense of profound betrayal that was imminent if it hadn't already happened. So in the cup of sorrow exercise, we have someone role play being the parent, talking to the child, the cup of sorrow back and forth and saying, you know, honey, men will always leave you. And as children, we grow up wanting to be close to our parents. So we drink that cup in order to stay in companionship with them. And it's not something that's formally brought out, you know, once a week or once a year. Here is the family cup of sorrow. It's something that's sipped insidiously in many different settings. So once we have the people identify what went into the cup of sorrow, then they begin passing it back and forth from the parent, and until Jesus, we have them visualize Jesus stepping between them, taking the cup of sorrow from the parent and turning to the child figure in the role play and saying, I was with your mother who was betrayed, and I am with her still, and I have drunk the cup of sorrow, so you don't need to. So we actually have actual water in the cup, and so the Jesus figure drinks the cup in front of the child in the role play and then turns it upside down so they can last drop hitting the ground. And then the Christ figure says to the person, you are free to go. Well, it has had profound impact on people to be able to visualize all of it in one setting. And really, that's what Jesus did. He drank the cup of so we could be free. Not so we could go around, you know, being sad, it was beaten up. He drank the cup of sorrow so we could be free of it. You know, turn it over to the Lord. Turn it over to the Lord. Why do you turn it? So you don't have to drink it. So then after that scenario, if you pick up the cup of sorrow again, then it's your choice.
Right, and you talk about this in the chapter about I think you had done the cup of sorrow in this situation as well, but that a mother had confessed she had planned to abort her child, and both she and her husband had felt they had their hands full and were concerned about the demands of having a late child in life. Ultimately, they decided to keep her, and glad that they did, the mother indicated, yet sometimes I worry about our child being so withdrawn. And you talk about that maybe perhaps the parents, you know, while the child was in the womb, the parents talked about whether to keep or not keep that child. And so maybe consequently, even that conversation was somehow communicated with that child while it wasn't even born yet, because there was really no reason for this child to feel unwanted. But for some reason, the child was going into her room, eating in her room, created this tent over her bed, would not socialize, you know, this whole image of not being wanted. And somehow in this chapter you talk about how that possibly could have transferred in the conversation while that child was still in the womb. And so not just the act of alcoholism or the act of actual abortion or aborting or abuse in kind of a visual or physical way, but in this case it was almost like transferred.
Well, yes, and certainly there, you know, I'm not trying to be a clinical psychologist or psychiatrist. The child that they were talking about in the chapter could have real issues. But we do know that children do respond to sounds that they hear in utero. And the story is told many times of the fathers, you know, who sing to the baby. And then if they're in the delivery room, I had a friend who was there when his baby was born, and he called out his name, and the baby turned his head when he heard the father's voice. So, you know, this isn't about making people feel guilty about conversations that they've had. It's about understanding the concept of welcome and how we can make that happen just today. We can start now. You know, if we didn't do it before, we can start now.
Sure. Sure, and I don't, and the chapter wasn't insinuating that you were, you know, going down that track of trying to make somebody feel bad about a conversation. It was exactly how do we turn those situations into a space where the welcoming is released, you know, and where it is felt and where it is appreciated. You know, I think that's the direction that you were trying to take us in these chapters. So there's one thing I think that stuck out for me, Lori, in this section of how Jesus made people feel welcome, and that is that no matter what our age or level of interaction as human beings, the need for welcoming or welcomeness cannot be, you know, overstated. It's just there. I mean, we all need it. And so if we all need it, why isn't it on our list?
You know, leaders can, you think about what happens in relationships where you walk into a room and your spouse doesn't even look up anymore, or your kids don't even look up anymore, or just people feel invisible. People need to be noticed. They need to know that they are seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much acting out behavior is because the people feel invisible. And I tell the story, the Bible tells the story of King David and Absalom, his son, who had been banished for his horrible treatment of the sister. And I think I have that part right. But I do know that Absalom, his father wouldn't see him, so he went out and set his father's fields on fire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In order to get attention, he needed to be seen. He needed to have that sense of welcome again, whether he deserved it or not. So I think it's a profound and yet simple thing for leaders to do, or you family members. Do you make people feel welcome when they walk in the room? Do your eyes light up? You know, do you get happy?
Wow.
When you're around them.
Well, a great word and a great reminder this week, Lori. Thank you for sharing these principles with us this week. Great talking with you, and we look forward to next week's show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shelley. Bye-bye.